Welcome to what will be the last MTG Folklore for this year. I'm pretty sure I promised at least 6 episodes and then managed to miss that entirely. So we're going to finish it out with a 5th and hope that it's a good episode. Of course, this won't be the last podcast that this channel will be producing this year. There'll still be another wrap-up podcast at least after the final event. And also, I believe we've got at least one more Dungeon Master's Guide to come out as well. But this will be the last you'll get from me, because I'm running away overseas, because I'm fancy like that. But before I do, let's explore death in MTG. Rescue from the Underworld is a personal favourite for me. As far as reanimation spells goes, it's not favourable, nor is it particularly useful for abusing Enter the Battlefield triggers. No, what this card does is tell an ancient story of love, loss, and betrayal. Others may see it as a self-serving or greedy story, but every so often, people find a need to ignore the natural order. Tonight on MTG Folklore, we're defying death. Rescue from the Underworld is a Theros instant for 4 generic and 1 black mana, with the additional cost of sacrificing a creature. You may then return target creature from your graveyard along with the one you sacrificed to the battlefield during your next upkeep. As Theros mirrors Greek mythology, this card is a retelling of the story of Orpheus and Eurydice. Attacked by a satyr and falling into a nest of vipers, Eurydice dies from a poisonous bite to her heel. Upon discovering his wife's body, Orpheus plays a song so sad all the gods and nymphs weep. This leads to Orpheus attempting to enter the underworld, hoping his music would soothe the heart of Hades and Persephone. The 3 strike up an agreement, wherein Eurydice would return to Earth on one condition. Orpheus shall walk forward and never look back at his wife until they are back on the surface, regardless of what happens. Orpheus reaches the surface and anxiously looks back to his wife, who had not quite reached it yet. Breaking his promise, Eurydice disappears forever. The final line of the card reflects this. Exile, rescue from the underworld. There is no going back. Attempts to defy the natural order by entering a realm of the dead are common throughout world religion and folklore. These are generally considered the act of a hero, but this is not the only way to bring the lost back to Earth. Necromancy is the practice of raising a spirit, apparition, or the physical body of the deceased for divination, reanimation, or to use the dead as a weapon. Records show that necromancy was attempted throughout most of the Western world, with Babylon, Greece, Egypt, Persia, and Rome all having diviners. These processes would often involve symbols such as talismans, circles, as well as wands, incantations, and possessions of the deceased such as clothing. While the Greeks and Romans believed that individual spirits were limited in the amount of information they knew, most cultures suggested that the dead's knowledge was unlimited of both past and future events. By the time of the Middle Ages, Christian influences suggested that necromancy was not possible without the intervention of a god, and hence divination was always conducted in contact with a demon. The requirements became more specific at the same time, with each summoning requiring its own selection of objects or sacrifices collected at exact times and locations with unique methods. No matter the story, a common theme is sacrifice, a toll or tithe to be paid to account for this disruption of the natural order. The 2 most commonly used reanimation spells, Exhume and Reanimate, allow your opponent to raise their own creature and hurts you equal to its CMC respectively. These show 2 commonly presented side effects in folklore: personal injury or the loss of your own humanity as part of the act, and the possibility of the entity returning being far, far from what you remember. Seriously, what is it that Grizzlebrand does again? Of course, most world religions believe in a human being made of 2 components, the physical body and the immortal spirit. So far, we've been dealing with the latter, but a mindless body can also be quite useful. Zombies have been a mainstay in MTG since Alpha, seeing competitive play both as a tribe and in Graveyard Matters decks, such as Dredge and Reanimator. However, necromancy wouldn't be the central plot point in the game until the introduction of the Planeswalkers, including Liliana. Liliana's origin story is a classic cautionary tale. Studying as a healer on her home plane of Dominaria under the tutelage of Lady Anna, a young Liliana is tasked with finding the cure for her brother Josu. Looking for a specific route, Liliana discovers the only grove where they grow has been torched. At the suggestion of a strange man who seemed to know a lot about her life, Lily uses the necromancy she has been studying in secret to reanimate the root and to create the potion for her brother. Upon consumption, Josu is cured of his affliction, but quickly driven insane and distorted by a new form of poisoning. The fear of what her brother has become and the need to fight allows Liliana to begin raising the corpses of those her brother attacks, creating an army of zombies to fight him. This is sufficient to trigger Liliana's spark and allow her to escape to Innistrad, where her power will later be instrumental in defeating Emrakul with a substantially larger zombie horde. This is suitably morbid, but none of this can be possible, right? Haitian voodoo believes in an unknowable creator, Bondi, that does not influence human affairs, and hence practitioners instead worship its subservient spirits called Loa. The modern voodoo is linked with Satanism and witchcraft, but the actual is not linked with any of these ideas, or voodoo dolls for that matter. Instead, zombies appear as a tool of the Boka, a group who is said to serve Loa with both hands, meaning they practice both good and evil sorcery. This was considered only part of folklore until the release of Cleveris Nashi's book as part of the Wade Davis research in 1982. Having been presumed dead for 18 years, Narses returns to his sister's village. He explained that he had died, been buried, and risen to work on a plantation after his soul had been stolen by a boka. He would then work in a mindless state for 2 years before the death of his boka, after which he wandered in a daze for 16 years. The interesting aspect of this story is that he had been deemed officially dead by trained doctors, leading Wade Davis's research to suggest some kind of toxin was used to induce this state. A concoction of animal and plant matter, including crushed skulls, lizards, toads, and pufferfish, nicknamed zombie powder, was allegedly administered to the patient prior to his reported death. This led to the tetrodotoxin in the pufferfish, a neurotoxin, being identified as the possible culprit, along with regularly administered hallucinogenic drugs. He was the first modern man to be considered a zombie. That was until studies in 1988 showed that the reports withheld negative data and were largely inconclusive. He didn't even show any of the signs of Hollywood zombie aggression. We'd need rabies for that. And that's all I have for you guys today. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast throughout the year. I know there was very few of them, but the whole podcast network, we really appreciate it. We will, of course, be back next year producing this kind of content, possibly in a different style, possibly with different shows. We have to have a lot of meetings about that. But if you want to hear more from me specifically, you can check out the other podcast I occasionally work on called The Bitter Beatdown, Tom and Brian's Bitter Beatdown with Sam. And you can find that in iTunes, and I will unashamedly link it in the description of this podcast here that you're listening to. Also, make sure you're heading on down to Ned Space's final event, as was discussed in the wrap-up podcast, but just to reiterate, the Dungeons & Dragons team will be running their final event, where the team will be descending into hell itself, so that promises to be pretty intense if you're into that sort of thing. And of course, there will be your regular selection of board games, card games, Magic the Gathering, and everything going on. And then if you're at that event, or if not, if you listen to the wrap-up podcast, you'll hear about our Christmas plans and everything that's going to be happening in the future that we know of so far. So please head on down if you can, if you're in the area. Otherwise, listen in. It's been a pleasure recording these podcasts for you, and you will hear from me next year. I've been Brian Hayes. This episode was written and produced by me in association with the Nerdspace Group. The music from this episode was Awkward Meeting and Lightless Dawn, and used under Creative Commons, of course, by the fabulous Mr. McLeod. And if you want to get involved in future events, visit facebook.com/nerdspaceofficial or oznerdspace.wordpress.com. And yes, I still haven't learned how to pronounce anything. Sue me.